One of the things that I've run into in my organizing career and my productivity coaching and my career coaching and resume writing business, quite frankly, that I never really imagined when I started was how often I might work with people who are neurodivergent, whether that's ADHD or autism or any number of other brain-based conditions that show up that inform why they've reached out to me and how we'll work together. The other thing that's important to know is during menopause, perimenopause, menopause, postmenopause, what's going on with our hormones is also often exacerbating what's going on with brain-based conditions. And I wanted to bring one of my friends, one of my organizing friends, to talk a little bit about that. She is neurodivergent. She works with clients who are neurodivergent, and she loves studying this stuff. So I want to bring her expertise that she has from an educational point of view, but also a practical point of view of how she works with people every day in that space. This is Surfing the Quicksand. I'm your host, Kathy Vines. About 12 years ago, when I was at a conference for NAPO, the National Association of Productivity and Organizing Professionals, I attended a session where I learned for the first time that the biggest population of people being diagnosed with ADHD was adult women, especially adult women in the menopause and postmenopause era. And it was blew my mind when I heard it. And it's been on my mind ever since then. And in those 12 years, we've only learned more and we've only experienced more. And now that this is my peer group of women in their 40s and 50s and going through menopause and starting into postmenopause, it absolutely seemed to be top on my list for what I would want to talk about for an episode on Surfing the Quicksand. So I invited Jenny Cervantes Wilson to join me today. She's one of my organizer friends, my frolleagues, and she is neurodivergent. She is a cancer survivor. She is a trauma-informed certified professional organizer. She also has a whole bunch of other certifications in hoarding and ADHD and other brain-based conditions. And she's been a professional organizer for 5 years, but helping people in this space her whole life. So when I thought about working with the neurodivergent population and her expertise in this area, not only as a person living that way, but working with clients in this space all the time, I knew we were going to have a robust conversation. So welcome, Jenny.
Thank you, Kathy. I'm so excited to be here. I can't wait to talk about all the things. It's gonna be great.
And all the things really is the idea, right? We're going to talk about a lot tonight, and I want to start with kind of your story and your backstory. Will you share a little bit with us around how you got into this? And I do want to say it's weird to me sometimes that you've only been doing this 5 years because I feel like your depth and your expertise in the space feels so much richer.
Thank you. I have been curious about people and their environments forever. Back to Trading Spaces. It's
Yes.
like been a long time. So, even when I was in finance, corporate America, my leisure time was reading books and watching television about environments and organizing and things like that. So how I started officially being an organizer, I left corporate America in 2019 and had the freedom to rest and think about what do I want to do. And I really enjoy making sense of spaces. It feels so good. I love it. And then I did research and realized that professional organizing is a job that has easy entrance. And so I was reading Dr. Kimmerer's Braiding Sweetgrass at the time, and hence my name, Sweetgrass Organizing. Sweetgrass is medicine, that's basic. And Dr. Kimmerer talks about humans interacting with sweetgrass. Not really, it doesn't really matter the approach. It's just that interaction that helps it grow better. So I think of us as working in our environments, whatever you're doing, every little bit improves the space, right? And then I started, as most of us do, just who will hire me? Please, anyone, I will come and work with you. And very quickly found the people that I connected with were going through it. They were chronically ill, neurodivergent, overcoming a huge life change. And through that, I just sort of narrowed in to my current people who are all neurodivergent in one way or the other, from depression, autism, ADHD, type 2 bipolar, like it's all
Yeah.
over the place.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I love that. And thank you for sharing the story behind Sweetgrass. I'd never heard that
Oh,
story
yeah, sorry,
about the
yes.
origin of your business name. I always assumed it had something to do with maybe with Braiding Sweetgrass, which is such a lovely book. But I love how you brought that into kind of the work that we do. I will tell you when I first started organizing 13 years ago, I really had no Wasn't that I had no interest in working with a neurodivergent population? It wasn't part of what I thought I would do or who I thought I wasn't going after it, something. And I ended up stumbling in probably my first year of business. Again, anybody who will hire me. And I ended up working with a woman who had a number of things going on, clinical depression, some other mental health issues. She was in a 12-step recovery program, but ADHD was really the headline. And I remember having this experience working with her and really seeing through some stumbles, but a lot of successes. Oh, I actually love working with ADHD clients. I didn't know, I still don't know what it is about me or them or us that feels like such a good connection, but I really do appreciate that stumble into working with this one client opened up so much for me in terms of who else I might work with in this space.
Yeah, that's, I love that. Serendipity, the universe, don't know, but that getting that experience is life-changing. I love that you got that so early too.
And I that inspired me to start taking coursework with the Institute for Challenging Disorganization, which I actually think I know you better from that world than I even do from NAPO because we've been to many of those conferences together. And that's where I got to do such deeper dive into the brain-based conditions, again, a number of them, but really the ADHD, some of the hoarding, the chronic disorganization, all of that. That's what transformed my professional organizing career from I'm helping people with pantries and basements to I'm helping people re-engineer their environments around the life and the brain they have rather than what they see in a magazine and think is what they're supposed to go after.
Yes, I know we've talked about this before. No shade to the pantry people. It's
Yes.
beautiful. It's beautiful. You do beautiful things. Generally, my clients are that's not what they need. I think I have had clients that say they want the acrylic pantry, and then as we talk about it, what they really want is ease. So they see a picture of crisp and beautiful and aesthetic, but what they want, like they're craving less distress. I just want to get to my Nutri-Grain bars and my protein shakes, and I want my kid to have their bin for their Go-Gurts, and I want to breathe. And so like leading a person away. I mean, magazines are great for Pinterest beginning things and then going under because it's, as we know, it's almost never about the stuff. Like almost never. So yeah, so the pantry beginning is There's so much more there.
And I do love that that is the kind of thing that motivates people to get started in the first place, right? They will see a picture, they'll see something on television, they'll be in a friend's house and they'll be marveling, how did you get your home like this? Every time I come to your home, it feels so welcoming and it feels so calm. Why can't my home be like that? And I love that you talked about, gee, they say they want acrylic, but what they want is the feeling that they think that picture is going to give them. And I think that that's where working with a professional sometimes can be very eye-opening, because you discover what you think is your problem actually may not be.
And to wrap it back to our neurodivergent community, if your organizer doesn't have the training that you and I, Kathy and I have, they may hear what you're saying and not filter it through that experience of, okay, well, they want this, so I'll just give it to them, not understanding that there is executive function concerns that make that result really hard to keep up. And then the client feels like a failure. The client feels like it's their fault for they thought they asked for this thing, they got it, and then it wasn't sustainable. So should your listener choose to hire an organizer, hiring someone that's in your thing, whatever your thing is, in your thing is invaluable.
Let's go back a second, because you mentioned executive function. So
Oh,
I want to
yes.
do let's do a quick explanation, because if you are somebody who struggles with executive function, you may have a sense, but if that isn't you, let's give a little definition.
People with ADHD have difficulties with executive dysfunction. Those things look like impulsivity. So think impulse buying, saying yes to way too many things, difficulty with motivation and follow through. And a huge one is difficulty with memory. So, like you're like, yes, I will remember to call my mother every Wednesday. And then you absolutely do not remember to call your mother every Wednesday. Those are brain-based things. It's not a matter of being a bad person or careless. It's not a moral thing. It's a cognition, it's brain. And I think,
I think of
yeah.
the conversation I have with people around memory. It's working memory, except it stopped working, right? It's like it's your working memory that's definitely not working. And then of course there's like planning and sorting, and whether that's space or thoughts. I worked with a family once where it's four people in the house, three of them had ADHD, and it all showed up differently for each of them. One person was the endless researcher, right? Could never pull the trigger. The next website was always going to have the magic answer to whatever he was researching. The mom was just had no sense of time estimation and thought everything was 5 minutes and nothing was 5 minutes, so she was chronically late. And then the older daughter, she it was really sequencing, right? And planning. And so for her, she would be the kind of person who would get in the shower and then never realize that there were no towels, and like the shower had ended, and like never occurred to her. And so it was very interesting seeing kind of executive dysfunction show up differently for three humans. And oh my gosh, their poor youngest, who definitely was neurotypical. And she was like, all these people are unrelatable, right? But being able to say, oh, it doesn't always show up for people in the same ways, even in the same house with the same kind of gene collection. So executive function can show up in so many different ways with deficits.
Absolutely. And time blindness, thank you for adding that to the list
Gosh.
for sure. It's huge, like thinking that in the organizing world, thinking that, oh, I can clean out my closet in 3 hours, right? And some people, maybe most people know it takes, if you're doing it on your own, it takes a really long time, and it's better to, break it down into chunks and categories and whatnot. But yeah, time blindness is a tough one.
Yeah. And I know we talk about this, and if you're listening and you're somebody in this kind of deeply steeped ADHD world, there are two times for someone with ADHD: now and not now. And right now, and I've always loved when I get to talk about that with people, saying, when we're talking about planning or productivity, and because I'll get a lot of productivity coaching clients that come to me with ADHD, and we kind of have to talk about that reality of we're not going to be able to change how your brain interprets time. We've got some tools that we can definitely use that are going to help you manage it, but the way that your brain interprets time and then brings that in naturally to planning, it's a real deficit there.
It is, and they're in right. There are things that can help, and to bring it full circle to our women entering perimenopause and menopause, many of us have built scaffolding in our lives from childhood because we are expected to hit these milestones in school and taking care of our siblings and the home and whatnot. We moved into adulthood with all of these tips and tricks we didn't even know were tips and tricks that held our life together. And then hit the hormone drop off and that scaffolding collapses and we think, what is happening? And many women in midlife are freaking out and then they find out, I had ADHD this whole time, but I masked and built these behaviors that were so powerful, I got all the way through until my 40s before anybody noticed. That's a huge, huge happening in, well, in my world. Maybe, I mean, maybe my algorithm is feeding it to me, but there's a lot of women experiencing
Yeah,
that
I would
now.
say yes. And I would say another thing that kind of exacerbated this for a lot of women, again, I'm talking about this moment in time, was the pandemic, right? So you talk about not only the scaffolding that was already there, right? Well, I'm getting through my days, I'm getting through my weeks, I'm getting through my months because I have to get the kids to school and then I have to get myself to work and I have to do this. And then things shifted, things collapsed, and the scaffolding with it. So the structures and routines that we relied on to have in place vanished, and the needs and demands for our time and our attention and our working memory and our other skills exploded. And that's where I think I have heard such that increase around kind of 2021 and on, those increased diagnosis rates, really that moment in time revealed the true self for a lot of people.
That makes so much sense because I think about for myself and my high sensory needs, I worked at home alone with my spreadsheets and my music or my Grey's Anatomy, and it was really controlled. And then I exited, but I can imagine in 2020. All of a sudden, your entire family is in your house, and there is no quiet. There is no Grey's Anatomy, and there's things happening, and people got pets spontaneously. I can imagine that was for some people really surprising to find, oh, I can't tolerate this. Because if you don't know, you don't know.
Right. Right. So it was a surprise. And for some people, again, some of that same time frame, we're under so much stress, you aren't questioning, gee, is something going on with me? No, I'm focusing on getting the whole family upright and out the door, or not out the door in those days. But the idea of saying we don't necessarily know, as with so many things, until some time has passed, that you say, wait, things have been like this for a while now. That wasn't a blip. This feels a little bit more permanent. N now it's time for maybe to talk to a medical professional to get some questions, because it can also be scary, right? Could also be, I don't know what it is. Maybe it's something serious. Maybe it's something else going on with my brain that I really need attention to.
Absolutely. And I think, I mean, we Our phones can feed us lots of things, and sometimes it is, I didn't know I had a brain tumor kind of thing. And so that those, well, I lose my keys, and I don't, and then in my family, we have a history of dementia and Alzheimer's, right? And so there, I can imagine, for my mother having this transition and being terrified of, I forgot things. I forgot things. I don't feel like myself. I can imagine that's very scary if you don't have foundational knowledge that, oh, hey, as early as 35, your estrogen levels can drop. Like, if you don't know that, I can imagine it'd be really scary.
Let's so you mentioned estrogen, so let's talk about the hormones. So what's going on physiologically during perimenopause, menopause, postmenopause? What's going on, and how is that driving this phenomenon?
I have published links that we'll put in the show notes. So this isn't just me winging it, because I'm not a medical professional. So our bodies produce less and less estrogen, progesterone, testosterone. Those things are hella important for cell regeneration and building muscle, building bone, heart health, mood. I think we talked about there's a correlation with estrogen levels and our ability to produce and absorb oxytocin, I believe. Like there's a lot. It's a chemical cocktail, and as we age, those things drop off and it makes everything harder. So it's not only mood and memory, it's also joint pain and fatigue and irregular menstrual cycles or no menstrual cycles, or you go 6 months and then all of a sudden you have an emergency, right? And it makes everything unpredictable and chaotic.
So this sandwich generation, and again, we're taking care of our kids, we're taking care of our parents, we're trying to take care of ourselves, we're probably doing a bad job of it. And again, it's you're everything's falling off a cliff. So how are we starting to see this impact of the drop of the estrogen, the progesterone, the testosterone? How are we starting to see that show up in our lives at home, at work, that starts to give the impression it's executive function, it's ADHD.
Yes. So the I think about when it comes to impulsivity, like there are mood shifts that come with hormone changes regularly, but if we are impulsive, where we used to be able to strap that down at work, that is no longer possible. And so you might have big emotional reactions that don't feel like you. Where you used to be able to make your meetings mostly on time, most of the time, that is just out the window. Things are getting missed, lost, in a way that feels, again, really chaotic. Being able to, oh, go ahead.
I was going to say you were kind of describing the impulsivity, and it's one of those terms I'm familiar with is the kind of emotional dysregulation, right? And that idea of, gosh, when things happened before, I used to be able to kind of keep it in check. Now my ability to not keep things in check, especially those emotions and reactions I am normally good at filtering. Now I'm not so good at that. Or my reaction feels extreme, kind of out of nowhere, where like, this wouldn't normally set me off so much, but now it is. Is that in line with what you were talking about?
I think that is probably the better why for those maybe explosive reactions. I guess when I think of impulsivity as like the break. Like our ability to be like, oh, I want to do that, but I'm not because I'm a grown up, and that kind of it slips. But yeah, but I think emotional regulation, you're absolutely right, is a key flag.
And I feel like I can only imagine, I haven't had this experience with a client, but I'm imagining for some people that impulsivity can turn into shopping, acquiring, trying to find new hobbies, trying to find new things, and oh, the next one's going to be good, the next one's going to be good, and that space. And again, that's how things come to organizers when they say, I'm overwhelmed because I have so much stuff. Yeah, right. Let's look at some of your acquisition habits and how those have changed.
That
Yeah.
is absolutely true. So our people are Our people are often not sleeping, right? You wake up at 3 a.m. sweaty and in pain, and you can't go back to sleep. So you're scrolling your phone. And in the middle of all that social media, are suggestions like, oh, are you having trouble sleeping? Here, try this. And then it will be all of these, cooling blankets and fans and eye masks, and maybe those things help some people, but that's how they get you, and you keep buying and buying and buying, and then your body is changing, and so you're buying all the clothes to see if you can still wear clothes. It's an awful lot, and yeah, that pairing, the desperation, and then the executive dysfunction together can make a hole in your bank very quickly.
Yes. The other thing I think about in terms of a way that I start to see, maybe it's ADHD, right? Is kind of that ability to initiate tasks or motivate to say, I used to have no problem on a Saturday doing the things that I know are on my list, and now I just can't get myself to start doing the things that I know I have to. I know I have been able to, but now I can't. I do think that's another, again, kind of one of those cry for helps that I get in terms of
Absolutely.
organizing clients of, I should be able to do this. I have been able to do this. Now I can't.
Yes.
Talk to me
Yes.
about that and how that shows up with your clients.
I think so, yeah, for sure. So in this season of my career, my clients are experiencing more extreme environments. I think that is absolutely true, that oh, I could do it, and now I can't anymore. How it comes across is usually shame. I like to say the softness that we offer others, that softness is for other people. We don't give it to ourselves. So there is this, well, yeah, I can't sleep and I don't feel good and my body is changing and everything is terrible, but I should still be able to get up and do orange slices at 7 a.m. Like that. If your friend said that to you, you'd be like, Donna, what are you doing? Right? But for ourselves, we do have this almost combative, like our if our desire and will is strong enough, then we can overcome anything. So yeah, I think I see it, but it's communicated in a different way for my people right now.
I do think that shame shows up so often when we work with clients, neurodivergent or not. But
100%.
I think it, I find it's more exacerbated with an ADHD client. And I want to make sure neurodivergency is not just ADHD, and I want to
Right.
kind of speak about that in a second.
Sure.
But I do feel like there's so much failure that you're facing, that sense every day of, well, I screwed up another thing. I dropped another glass and broke it again. I'm just a klutz, right? All the things that start to add up, that start to be very self-defeating. That's already a baseline. And then by the time they're saying, I think I need help and I should call somebody, and I'm not even talking about calling the doctor or calling a therapist, they're
No.
talking about calling an organizer because they say, my house is a mess. I'm overwhelmed. I have not. No way to start on this clutter. That's We are the people they are calling to first. I've often been the one to say, "Have you talked to your doctor? Have you had your physical? Have you talked to your doctor about whether or not maybe you've got something going on?" And there have been many times like, "No, do you think I should?" Well, yeah, here are some things that I've noticed in our time working together. Tell me how this sounds to you. And when I'm able to almost give them the list to talk to their doctor about, like, "Oh, because they don't necessarily realize there's something that can be done, right?" And I've worked with many people with ADHD. Some are medicated, some are not, right? And again, no judgment. Do what's right for
No,
you.
what feels
I
good
what
to
I what I
you?
do tell people is if you are on medication, take your medication the day we work together, right? Don't consider that to be a holiday, right?
Yeah.
But the idea of saying, listen, if you don't want to be medicated, that's okay. But that doesn't mean there aren't strategies and
Yes.
tips that you can use that help. And honestly, that's not what this episode is about. It's not about giving everybody tips and tricks on that. And though I definitely could do another episode on that at some point. But what I do tell people is even if you think you have ADHD, but you don't want to talk to a doctor about it, and you would never get drugs, that's fine. Looking into those strategies, try them out. You're not going to screw anything up by reading a book on like organizing with ADHD and trying some things and saying, "Oh, huh, that made a difference." Or relating to things like, "Oh, when I was a kid, my mom set my room up like this. I had no idea that I hadn't really done that as an adult. I wonder if I were to try that again, is that the right thing for my brain?"
Speak it. Speak it. I am a huge cheerleader for people taking the online assessments. And again, those will probably be in the show notes. I have a list. I think so. Many of my people are neurodivergent members of the global majority, right? And so our access to certain kinds of mental health professionals who understand our cultures and our upbringings and how that interacts with the assessment is kind of hard. And so, doing the online assessments just to get a feel for what are the questions asking, what are the symptoms they're talking about, reading the books can be like, well, I feel that, but I wasn't allowed to express it because it's unacceptable in my culture, right? Even if we never get an email that says, "Dear Jenny, you have a diagnosis of this," me and you can, oh, well, this person has this thing that looks like my thing and they do blah. I'm going to try that. And just giving ourselves the opportunity to experiment to even if ultimately that isn't our diagnosis, maybe the trick still works, right? So yeah, huge, huge fan of self-diagnosis can be diagnosis if it helps you.
Yeah. And that
Yeah.
just that allowing yourself to be curious and saying, I'm going to experiment. I'm going to try this. And
Yeah.
another phrase that many of us use is, you know, if this works for my ADHD clients, it'll work for my neurotypical trans clients too. You could try it too, right? So it doesn't have to, it's not like it's a separate menu of options that only work with some kind of brain.
That's exactly right. And you mentioned you wanted to talk about
Yeah.
other
Yes.
neurodivergences besides ADHD. It's
Yeah.
such a big one because the environment can reflect ADHD very loudly. And so I think that's why we talk about it so much. I also have many clients with, like I said, a borderline personality disorder, depression, OCD, autism is a big one. And late in life, autism diagnoses are common in my client group, usually because those of us socialized as girls were taught to like strap it down, to stay still, to stay quiet, don't scratch an itch for uncomfortable clothing, wear ugly shoes, or uncomfortable shoes rather. So we move into adulthood with all of these cultural restrictions. And we don't even know that we are overwhelming our nervous system every day until, again, midlife, less hormones, and we can't ignore it anymore. And so, with those curiosities, you can find out about noise-canceling headphones, loop earplugs, having safe foods, your favorite t-shirt and leggings that you buy in every color because those feel right, so that all of that curiosity can apply to many different experiences and diagnoses.
I do think, again, women being diagnosed with autism over the last 3 or 4 years became one of my largest growth populations of people wanting to work with me. And that tended to be more on the productivity side, not necessarily the in-person organize or the virtual or in-person organizing side, more productivity. But I was so taken aback by how often I was getting calls from people saying, I've recently been diagnosed with autism, and my husband and I thought it would be good that I worked with somebody. And loving hearing support at home, loving hearing that they're trying to redefine how systems are built, how their communication processes were going with this newfound information, right? In the same way that, say, oh, what would you do with a diagnosis, right? So, oh, an ADHD medication, or ADHD diagnosis, would you take medication? No. Okay, then do you really need one? Right, we talk about that. But with an autism diagnosing, so what would be different? And for some people, it's the, well, at least I'd have an explanation. At least now I'd know why these things are a problem in my marriage or a problem in my home or a problem in my workplace because my worldview feels unrelatable to others.
I think women are also taught not to trust themselves. So they need a white-coated professional to know, you're right, Janet. That is your diagnosis, right? And I'm that way. Trust. I did the assessment. So I am that way. However, being diagnosed as an adult is actually very difficult, especially if your parents are no longer cogent or living, because they need historical data that you don't have usually. You don't remember what you were like at 2 unless you've got really detailed baby books, right? So there's questions that they may ask. I mean, you can guess, or maybe you have an older sibling that can help. So that's hard. Not impossible, but hard. It's harder to get that somebody with a PhD D at the end of their name, to give you that official diagnosis. So I think sometimes the self-diagnosis is what's accessible.
It's so interesting because I don't feel with the other ones we've talked about, ADHD, OCD a little, depression, right? I don't feel like you need to have a lifelong understanding of your psyche and experience and behaviors to be able to come up with that kind of diagnosis. But I can see with autism how it really is integral to say, it's unlikely that how you're showing up at 40 isn't mostly also how you showed up at 4, but in a different way.
And so we can, I believe it's really essential to trust our lived experience. And if someone's telling you it's not that way, then perhaps they are not the best person for you in this journey. Especially when it comes to autism, or some people experience it as HSP, highly high sensory person. When we, there's many of us who want to be a floating brain. We don't want to be in our body. No, thank you. It's uncomfortable in there. So when we get connected to our body, we're like, oh, everything is loud and it feels gross and it tastes wrong. And I hate, like, it's just, it's at an 11. It's so much. And so being able to, like, okay, let's slow down. Let's notice. Maybe it's my hair that's touching my face. Maybe I need to put it back. Maybe we can just turn down the air conditioning. Maybe we can change our socks. Like, instead of it being this alarm, it can be connecting with what our body is telling us, piece by piece, and trusting those signals. Instead of someone, say your brother is like, what are you even talking about? They're just socks. No, sir. Socks are very important. In fact, one of the running jokes I'm sure everyone has heard during the assessment, sometimes they ask you, do you have a problem with socks or footwear? And someone like me would answer no and stop, instead of no, because you see, I have a system. I, me, Jenny, myself, I have one kind of sock and I have two kinds of work shoes. And that is it, because that is what's safe for my nervous system. So there are things that feel really big to us that other people cannot comprehend. So we have to trust ourselves and our signals. Soapbox end.
No, I love this. And I want to, so I want to take this into working with clients, right? So when you're working with a neurodivergent client, and I'm thinking about it on two different levels, Jenny. One is, what is it you're trying to create with them for their environment? But the other is, how are you approaching working with them in the moment that respects, honors, observes what their neurodivergency is bringing into the process?
Oh, good question. So the first thing is my frequently asked questions page is miles long, because most people want data in advance. They want to understand what is going to happen before it happens. And then during our intake, I will explain, this is how I work. And really, it's not about the stuff. Like, because we'll just do that, whatever feels good to them. I have some clients who need to see my hands at all times. They have had people throw away their things without their permission, so they don't feel safe. So we are face to face. They can see my bright blue gloved hands at all times. And I ask permission before I touch literally anything. Versus other clients, they don't care. Yeah, you know what trash is, right? And then when it comes to respecting their experience of being, really, I explain in advance that I will notice. So, for example, I will tell them, hey, I might notice that you're holding your hands like this, right? And so I'm going to say, looks like your body is telling us you're a little distressed. Is there something that we can do that feels safer? Or if they're in a pretty activated state, I will do the two choices method, right? Would you like to get a glass of water, or would you like to sit and doom scroll for 5 minutes, right? So giving them two choices, both acceptable, that can give their brain a break because they are flooded, right? So it's more about noticing body language, explaining what's going to happen in advance, and honoring whatever it is that they need to feel safe.
One of the things I'm thinking about here is we're organizers. We're working with people in very intimate settings, and we're working with them for several hours, and we're working on very specific goals. But what you just described could be used by any family member, any coworker, any other situation where you are existing with someone who is neurodivergent who might experience things like that, to say, hey, in our relationship, if I see some things, how can we talk about that? But getting that permission in advance, or Gee, I can tell that they need a break. How should we structure what a break might look like? How I raise it? How we bring it back? I really appreciate that this is feels like very flexible tools that even if you're not in an organizer client situation, you could try these out.
100%. So, our last Institute of Challenging Disorganization conference, we had a doctor talk with us about cognitive decline. And the things that she talked about are things that can be used in any situation. I did an 8-minute TikTok about it because it was so, I was just lit up. Because when someone is in distress, it doesn't have to be dementia, Alzheimer's. It doesn't have to be any of those things. When we are panic, when you're freaking out, my therapist calls it flipping your lid. You go down to your base of your basic brain function of survival. And in that space, you're not really making the best decisions. So if your loved one or your coworker or your organizer knows those things, we can notice, oh, Sheila's in trouble. I know that Sheila likes Coke and she likes puppies, and we're at home. Hey, Sheila, do you want to go get a Coke or do you want to go hang out with Fluffy for a couple minutes? So she can't make, she can't, you can't be like, what can help you, Sheila? She doesn't know. She is freaking out. So if you know two choices, you could give them to her. She's like, oh, yes, I would love a Coke. I feel very thirsty, right? So yeah, absolutely. You can, it is wonderful. It's a great thing to try for everybody.
And I love that you kind of raised that notion of like in that moment, we can't put it on them to say, tell me what you need. Tell me what you want to do, right? We can't put it on them. They are not, when they're in a crisis mode, they're not going to have a logical conversation where they are able to reflect and provide input back to you. So
100%.
when you're able to kind of know, gee, when I'm working with somebody who is neurodivergent or they are in my life, what are the things that I know can help us get back to a little bit of a baseline, or at least just like a de-escalated moment that helps us kind of restabilize.
And I think about it's hard it when we're partnered, we get into systems, right? Of I do this, then she does that, then I do this and she does that, and it's a pattern, and it's what we're used to, even if it is so uncomfortable. Like, say it is not how I want to be in the world, but I'm used to screaming to get my way. I'm used to ignoring my bodily functions until I absolutely lose it, and then I am explosive with my children. Right. And there's these systems, and the noticing and the curiosity and the awareness of, oh, I am, do not, this is not who I want to be. In those calmer moments, you can build that structure with your partner to say, I don't want to be that kind of person anymore. Or all of a sudden, I'm this kind of person and I don't want to be it because of menopause, let's say. Would you help me? Would you give me the choices of a glass of water or and a snack or 5 minutes in the bathroom? 5 minutes in the bathroom, by the way, my trick for every situation. Every, I mean, literally, even at work. I'm gonna run to the restroom. I'll be right back. And just because the bathroom usually has a lock and our nervous system's like, oh, okay, I'm alone, I'm safe. It's a huge, works great. Works great.
And I think it comes back to that comment around from the very beginning of the conversation around environments and understanding the environment, like that is absolutely a relate to the physical environment situation. I want to talk about one more thing before we shift into the quicksand three. I mentioned that my first experience with somebody with ADHD, there was a stumble. And so I will tell you what the stumble is, and I'm curious if you've have some lessons learned as well. So I said to her, we're going to get started, and I said, should we put on some music?
Oh.
And 20 minutes later, she still hadn't picked out the right music for us to work together. I was like, oh, I will never with an ADHD client again give like an open-ended suggestion that taps into kind of the fact that there might be an optimal choice and failure, if you know what's going to be wasted if they don't hit the optimal choice, right? So I said, oh, so it reminded me when you're talking about those things where I now if I went back to her and say, should we listen to Madonna or should we listen to Gaga, right? Like that's what I would say to her today, knowing what I know about her now. What were some can you think of stumbles or kind of mistakes and learns that you made along the way that have informed better events?
So I have one of my original clients. We are still friends to this day. I went to her house and she used to work at a clothing store. And so she got a deep discount. She had many, 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 many clothes. And looking back on it, I notice that she was distressed. She was literally sweating, again, hands close to the chest. And she was checking in with me a lot, which I know now is she wanted to be a good girl. She wanted to do it right, which is, don't get me started, is a huge, huge, huge button for women. I mean, not just women, but often women. We want to do it the right way, right? We want to get an A in therapy, right? And so she gave me a literal car full, like passenger, rear, trunk, full of clothing in a 3-hour session. And I was new enough to think, well, she just was ready to let those go because she had so much. And I found out later that she reacquired immediately. And so the knowing now is to notice body language. And if it seems a little frantic, like a cartoon where you're packing or unpacking, like you're just like things are flying everywhere, that it's my cue to be like, okay, I'd like us to slow down. And this is me checking in. And so using the language of, I want to make sure these choices you're making are in alignment with your personal preferences and values. I don't live here. These are not my things. You cannot impress me. I already think you're a delight. Like there's nothing you need to do. There's no performance. This is just you and me and your wardrobe. What life do you want? And like just bringing it back. That's a big one. That was a big lesson.
Oh, I can think of how many clients you could just that really reminds me of how many clients where they want our approval, right? Sometimes they want us to make the decision. Well, I don't know, how many pairs of black pants should I have? What do you think? Right? That's what I'm like, I don't, these aren't my pants. I don't, I can tell you how many pair I have. We don't have the same life. But wanting our approval, I'll give it, I'll get rid of it if I think, if it's important. If you think I should get rid of it, I'll get rid of it. No, that's not what we're doing here. And really, that people pleasing side, it does take a lot. I think you're right. When you first start out as an organizer, to recognize the difference between they're doing great and they're doing great because they are doing what they think I expect of them. It really, that takes a little while. To notice and to be a little that term gray rocking where you're just like try and stay a little bit neutral, right? Like yeah, I think if you want to give away that's good. And it takes a while, but I that's a,
Does.
that's such a it's such a great kind of reminder of the you can't trust what they're saying, you can't trust what they're doing on the surface. Sometimes it takes a little bit
Sometimes.
deeper. Oh,
Yeah,
I love that.
Yeah.
Well, I want to switch to the quicksand three, which are the three questions I ask everybody, really aligned with helping women get unstuck. And the first is, what is a tip or technique or trick that you use to face something and actually do something that you've been avoiding?
If I have time, I will check in with myself to figure out what I'm afraid of. So, the there's a thought of I need to, I don't know, exercise. But I'm afraid if I do it once, I have to do it every day, right? So things like that. If I don't have time, I will just like just 2 minutes. Just go do 2 minutes of a thing. And like I will literally set a timer. Just like, and usually because our brains are little pattern fiends, once you start, you're like, oh no, I want to finish now. Right.
I think the idea of there are two things there, right? One is
Yes.
I'm just going to do it for 2 minutes, and the other is I'm going to set a timer, right? That scaffolding to say
Yes.
I'm not going to do it for less than 2 minutes, and if I don't want to do it for more than 2 minutes, either way, I have that system. So I think that that's
Yes.
great. The second is if money, skills, time in history, all of that were not an issue, what would have been a career or job you think you might have liked to try?
Oh gosh. My first answer is park ranger. I think my second one would probably be scientist, because like
Okay.
I like learning about stuff.
Oh, I love that. Well, tell me why Park Ranger.
Oh, I love being outside in the quiet. Put me by water anywhere. It's my favorite thing. Like just I think our bodies need it, frankly. But for me, it feels like that's where I'm supposed to be. So yeah.
Love it. And then finally, what's a way when life gets chaotic that you recharge or hit the reset button?
really, I lay on the floor. We have in our house a kind of really a music room, like it has a record player and that kind of thing. And so quite literally we'll put on a record, lay on the floor. Or if I don't have access to that, laying on a floor in a hotel room, putting my legs up the wall, like something about that feels like the world is more manageable.
Just like physically manipulating your body in a different
Yes.
way. Oh wow.
Yes.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for being here and for
Welcome.
sharing your personal experience and expertise, your professional experience, expertise, your perspective on kind of working with the neurodivergent population in a way that I think truly respects and amplifies their strengths and helps them get through to their challenges. Again, both the where are we trying to get to and what are we working with to get there? I love that conversation. I know that you're in the Dallas area, so of course, if you work with people in person in Dallas, but you also work with people virtually.
Yes. Yes, I
So if somebody loved hearing a bit more about you
do.
today and they want to work with you, they should go to Sweetgrass Organizing.
Yes. Yes. And so there are three options you can click on. Basically, if you email me, we'll start the conversation. I am booking in January for right now.
Okay.
So this will be much farther than that when this comes
Yes.
out.
It will, no, it will be, but well, not
Yeah.
much farther.
Oh, okay.
So right, but this is probably showing up in January for people who don't know, or I record these a little bit in advance. But yeah, so I think the idea that you're going to be taking clients a little bit out in advance, but having those conversations as soon as somebody's motivated is a great
Yes.
way to get started. Good. Thank you so much,
Okay.
Jenny. I'm so glad I had Jenny on to have one of those kind of deeper conversations, organizer to organizer, because I don't feel like I've had many of those just yet on Surfing the Quicksand, where we can talk a little bit about our shared and relatable experiences of working with clients who are neurodivergent. And even being able, as I was talking to her, being reminded of some of the client experiences I've had over the last 13 years that helps me draw some of those patterns together about where I started to grow into working with people who are neurodivergent, what I've enjoyed about it, lessons learned, and really being able to bring that fresh set of eyes as a partner during a difficult time or stress or crisis. And honestly, working on organizing can be stressful for people in that moment, and being able to be the partner and the support that they need at that time. If you are somebody who either knows they're neurodivergent, believes they're neurodivergent, and are interested in learning more. I think I'm happy to talk to you, and Jenny's happy to talk to you. I think there are some really great resources. You heard us both mention the Institute for Challenging Disorganization. This is a kind of a great research and education-based organization we belong to, where you can go and look at their directory and find an organizer who's has some credentials in that space. There are, if ADHD is what you're struggling with, working with an organization like CHADD, CHADD is another great resource. There's a lot of growth in this space of people who can help others during this time, getting better skills, better self-talk, better tools and systems and techniques to help work through these midlife diagnoses of neurodivergency. I hope this one also helped you think about people in your life who may be struggling with neurodivergency. And if you're in kind of a neurotypical slash neurodivergent relationship, or you have something else in your household, a little bit of technique and ideas of how to look at that one a little differently. Thanks so much for being here. And I look forward to hearing your thoughts on this one. Head over to quicksandpod.com and drop me a note if you have information to share on this one, comments, questions, or something else you want to hear about on one of future episodes.